Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. I'm joined today by leading nutritionist and mum of two, Charlotte Sterling Reed. You might know her from her Instagram, where she is SR Nutrition and shares really helpful stuff about feeding babies, toddlers with, shall we say, selective tastes, or her books. She worked with Joe Wicks on his Wean in 15 book, and her latest book, How to Feed Your Family, is a toolkit for family meals. Charlotte, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
I feel like I've wanted to have you on for years because I followed you for such a long time and we've met quite a few times and you've been on my list and we've just never quite managed to make it work. So I am so happy to have you here today.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure you've got so many good people to interview. So, you know, but I'm very excited to be here. Very excited to be talking about it. And yeah, like we've met such a long time ago when we first met. So we've been around for a while, haven't we?
Yeah, it's nice. So family meals. Why do you think mealtimes are such a crunch point for so many families?
Oh, I mean, in all honesty, I know that they are a crunch point for myself. You know, I'm a nutritionist. I work in this field. I have a family, but actually I find mealtimes a struggle. So for me, I think, how must everybody else feel? Because, you know, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but obviously I have a lot of information and advice on feeding the family.
I'm really good at this stuff, and even I find it hard.
I should be, but when my daughter came into the world and I had two kids, for me, it was a game changer. You know, I could cope with my son, feeding him. He loved food. He was really easy. You know, as a family, we love food. And then my daughter came along and so much changed. So much. She was just a very different character. I found parenting too incredibly hard. And when it came to mealtimes, I was thinking, how do I do this? And in all honesty, that's one of the reasons why I was really wanted to write this book, because I found it challenging. And I thought, what on earth is all those other families out there doing who've got more kids, who feel less confident with food, who don't like cooking? And so that was genuinely the reason why I created this book, because I find it hard. And I think it's feeding multiple tastes. There you throw fussy eating in. It's parents who have different interests, different tastes. It's, you know, that juggle of who's doing all of the housework. It's feeling really tired at the end of the day. It's trying to get energy to create a meal that you feel is healthy, balanced, that everyone will actually eat. I mean, there are so many complications. So if you're feeling this, as a family, you're not alone. And I was there too. And again, exactly why I created this book.
Yeah, I honestly feel like you've just described me.
Because good.
I'm all of those things. I don't really have much interest in cooking. I find it a bit of a chore. It just feels like one extra thing to kind of feel guilty about, like, what am I feeding my kids, you know, the snacks they're eating. And the fact that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, that we're so tired and towards the end of the day, like dinner time, which, you know, arguably is the most important. I know people say breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but for families, quite often it is dinner time. The kids are tired. We're tired. It's like, this is the worst. Like, who planned this? Who created this schedule? Like, we should not be having this important meal when we're all knackered.
It is so true. I totally agree with you. I think that kind of dinner time environment and having everyone together more often is a really important time. And so, yeah, you know, and I find that my kids, sometimes they come back from school or nursery, especially if they've had one of their long days, and they have no appetite. They're not interested. They're overtired. And then I've been working all day and then gone and picked up two grumpy kids. And I come home and I think, well, brilliant. Now I've got to try and cook them a meal while they're both moaning and groaning and laying across the floor and arguing. And it's just an absolute colossal nightmare.
Yeah. And also, I don't know if you find this, but we've had some really hot, sticky days in the last few weeks. Mm. And I just feel like that can affect things as well. It can affect my desire to get into the kitchen and cook something. Yeah. But also my kids are just, they want to just pick at things and not sit down and have a proper meal. So it feels like the odds are stacked against us.
So true. But there's loads of solutions. So exactly like you just said, I mean, I am such a fan. And I think as parents, we constantly feel like we have to cook this whole meal and put that. But actually, sometimes, you know, I talk in the book a lot. And recently, what I've been doing is I've been doing a lot more menu planning, which actually has helped me a lot. But one of the things I do in that is I give myself two, sometimes three fridge raid meals in the evening. So it's like, right, let's look in the fridge. What's available? A bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of this, plonk it on the table. We all sit down, we pick the bits that we want. And I think as parents, sometimes we think that's not enough, but actually it can be. It can be for our sanity. Actually, kids love that kind of meal where they have the control over what they're actually putting on their plate. It can make mealtimes less pressured, you're less stressed, and actually quite often it's going to be much more balanced than you think. So I'm such a fan of, right, what have I got in my fridge? I can grate a bit of that. I can pop that on a plate. I can bundle a bit of that on a plate. Oh, there's some leftovers. Let's quickly reheat that and bung that on a plate too. And, you know, that kind of Mediterranean way of eating where you just help yourself, it actually becomes much more social, much nicer. And kids often eat more because they have their own control and autonomy. So please, parents, don't be afraid of those kind of buffet meals. They often are the most helpful meals you can have.
Yeah, I've heard it referred to as like fridge or freezer tapas before. Yeah, so it feels like that. a really nice spin on just basically a picky tea.
Exactly.
Now, there's so much admin and mental load involved with feeding ourselves and our kids. You know, there's the meal planning, the buying the foods, navigating any intolerances or dislikes, cooking the meal, getting the kids to sit down and actually eat, never mind the washing up afterwards or like loading the dishwasher. It can feel unachievable at times, can't it?
Yeah. And I think it's really okay to accept that, yes, sometimes that is unachievable and sometimes you are going to go, right, beans on toast. Or sometimes you are going to go, let's have cereal today. I don't have the energy. And as long as you can have some of those meals, and even if you're having them really regularly, try and just add a little bit here and a little bit there just to balance them out slightly. That is also fine. And I would say to any person, so say, for example, you'll go, right, I cannot be bothered. It's beans on toast tonight. Chuck in a handful of fruit, you know, raspberries on the side. Grate a little bit of cheese on top. You know, if you have them and you use them like some milled seeds, you sprinkle those on top of it. You can add little extras that don't take any effort that make that whole meal even more balanced than it is. And actually, beans on toast is a really balanced meal anyway. So I just think, take those and go, this doesn't matter. You know, what we feed our kids in one meal on one week doesn't matter. And quite often we berate ourselves when actually beans on toast is a perfectly suitable meal, as is a fortified breakfast cereal with a splash of milk. And again, a handful of grated apple or you know, slices of apple on top. It's absolutely perfect. So don't berate yourselves for those. The other thing that I would say, though, and something I've been doing, is I give myself 1 to 2 hours at the weekend where I'm like, take the kids away. I want 1 to 2 hours to get myself organized for the week. And I actually have found since writing this book that doing a bit of menu planning, you don't even have to stick to the menu plan, but doing a bit of, what I do is I create two meals and I freeze them and I try and make them quite in bulk and I freeze them in separate, you know, containers. So there's, you know, two portions there, three portions there, one portion there. So I have multiple options throughout the week. And I create two meals like that, that are literally shove it all in a pan and leave it to cook. And then I shove it all in a container and I shove it in the freezer. And I can take, and I make two batches of snacks. And this takes me 1 to 2 hours at the weekend. And I know that sounds like a lot, but I cannot tell you the saved headspace during the week when I've done that. So when you've said to yourself, right, I've got two freezer meals for the week, and I've got at least 2 days where I'm quite happy to do a fridge raid or a quick beans on toast, that leaves one meal a week, really, if your kids are at school, for you to actually think, well, I've got to try and prep something or cook something. And even that doesn't really have to be that easy. It can be like, oh, I've got this left over, or I've made bulk, you know, for another meal, or, oh, what did we have at lunch? Can we double that up, kind of thing. So for me, that's what has worked so well, is that 1 to 2 hours. But you know, bulk make a couple of really simple meals and bulk make a couple of nice snacks and you are winning. And what I do is I put a podcast on, I'll stand in the kitchen, or I'll listen to some music on my Alexa device, and I will make the most of it. So I'll enjoy it. I'll have, you know, if it's in the evening, I might have a glass of wine with me, and just really make that time, a bit of me time, listening to not Disney or not whatever music that I don't want to listen to. I listen to something decent that I want to hear. And I love it. I really enjoy it. I've got no distractions. I'm on my own. Sometimes I do it in the morning, sometimes in the evening, depending on what I feel like. But for me, that has been a game changer. So sorry to go on, no, but that is what
for me. It's so helpful. And I think, you know, when I was reading your book, I was like, oh, I really feel like this would make a big difference for me. My issue with batch cooking is that when I tried to do it in the past, I'm really bad at remembering to take stuff out the freezer. So yeah, I'll remember at like 3 p.m. I'm like, oh, that stuff's still in the freezer. What am I going to do? So do you have any tips on like just being more organized? Like how do you remember to always take the right thing out? I guess if you're in the habit of doing it all the time, it's just part of your morning routine.
It is habit. Sometimes it's thinking at the beginning of the day or even the night before, just having, you know, most of us as parents, you know, I don't know everyone, but I'm sure most of us in the evening, we do a bit of an organize. So we get the kids' stuff ready. I just kind of try and tack that onto it. So what am I going to do? I need to get something out for tomorrow. Also, a lot of things can be defrosted in the microwave. So if you have a microwave, they can be defrosted. Or, you know, if you've got something like a frozen, I don't know, stew or pasta sauce, you know, putting it in a pan and slowly heating it in a pan, which takes a little bit longer, but again, can be really helpful. So not everything needs to be defrosted overnight, for example. You can defrost it in other ways. However, the other thing I do is I actually have a little thing, and there's a resource that I've created which goes along with the book. So it's kind of menu planning resource, but it also has a part of it which is food to use. So I have like a little chart on my fridge, so I know, right, this needs to be used up. And sometimes it's just about adding that to it, so get this out of the freezer. And again, if you are a menu planner, and that's something I've been doing so much more, because on a Sunday I just get all of my stuff prepped and I know this is what I'm having during the week. And I also don't worry if that doesn't go to plan and I go, you know, not doing that now, going to do the beans on toast. But yeah, so kind of just having that on a menu plan really helps you to go, I know what I'm having tonight. I know what I need to do. And on the menu planner I've created, it has on the kind of evening of the day before, it has a little note section, and I'll say, get this out the freezer. So you can think, right, I need to get that out the freezer, pop that in the fridge, boom, you know, I'm ready to go. So it's hard, because I totally get that. And I think some of the snacks I offer as well are quite good, because you can literally get them out of the freezer and they defrost in minutes. And so I often do I've got some like oaty cookies that, you know, go down really well with the kids, and some banana slices, and they work really well because they're so quickly defrosted. And if you're packing them and taking them out and about with you, by the time you get anywhere, they'll be defrosted anyway. So, you know, I think it's just about changing, just doing little things that make it easier. And also, like I said, if you get to the end of the day and you go, oh, I forgot to get that out, do the beans on toast, you know, do that option, and then get the thing out and swap it around for tomorrow and just do that for tomorrow. Yeah. But I do find that I've got a couple of tricky days in the week where my kids are at either, you know, at clubs and things like that. And for me, coming home and not thinking, oh my gosh, now I've got to try and think of cooking something. It's just going, oh yes, I've got this. It's ready to go. Boom. And it is it's the biggest relief in your mind. You just go, don't need to think about it. It's there.
That's so good.
So yeah, it's really helped me.
That's brilliant. And also, I'm so relieved to hear you mention beans on toast as a viable, okay option, because a few months ago we actually decided, let's have beans on toast once a day, not once a day, once a week.
I think you'd all get a bit fed up with beans on toast.
That'd be overkill, wouldn't it? Once a week. From yeah. a from a convenience point of view, but also from a cost point of view, we were like, you know, the cost of food is rising so much at the moment. And we were like, our food bills were going up and up and up. And we were like, let's just have beans on toast for one meal, one dinner. And then it's really helping us. So actually, I feel less guilty about that. Hearing you say it's actually not too bad.
Completely, yeah. And like I say, add a few little extras to it if you can, but it is actually pretty balanced meals. Beans get a bad rap, and I think obviously there's salt and sugar in them, but you know, it's about, again, what you do all the time. And if the other meals don't have salt and sugar added into them, then, you know, again, it's fairly balanced out. So, and I think beans on toast is a really good, it's a filling, it's this, you know, it's like you say, it's a nice budget option, it's a quick one, nothing's gone to waste because you've got maybe frozen bread in the freezer and a can of beans that lasts for such a long time. So it's a winner on so many levels. So yeah, let's absolutely not berate the old beans on toast.
Yeah,
and it's also delicious.
It really is, especially with a bit of cheese on top. Now, I would say my kid's definitely a little bit too much beige and not enough fruit and veg. And I'm so tired of the battles. I've heard that the fussier your child is, the more variety you should be offering them. But it's just so exhausting when the veg ends up on the floor or being hurled across the room, and it goes into the food waste bin. And it just feels like there's such a waste of money and energy. Yeah. How do mums like me get out of this rut? How do we encourage our kids to be eating more fruit and veg without losing our sanity?
It's really tough. And it's, you know, most parents will be struggling with this at some point. And there's, you know, there's evidence to show that. And I've been through it with both of my two. And it's hard and it's relentless and it's exhausting. Also, it takes time. So I think, you know, this idea of expecting that next month your child's going to be eating perfectly isn't really realistic, because kids go through phases of neophobia where they don't like, you know, unfamiliar food, or they start to reject foods that previously they had accepted. And it's a really normal part of their kind of development. It's often them expressing autonomy. So one thing I would say is try and give them plenty of autonomy and other choices if you can, because what children often do is they feel like they don't have autonomy elsewhere. So they start to go, right, I know I can control what I put in my mouth and I'm going to do it because I need to express my individualism and my, you know, so that's really helpful. The other thing is I mentioned already about the kind of buffet and what did you call it?
The freezer and fridge tapas.
So the kind of like tapas option, because again, you're giving them autonomy. So you're in control. You're in charge of what is offered and you're providing that spread, but they're actually in control of what they put on their plate. And although that might sound counterintuitive, and the first few times you do it, they might only choose cheese or bread, you know, like you said, the beige food. It takes time, but actually eventually they might start to spread out into the other one. So that the other thing that is so key, and it's almost impossible, and I struggle with it myself, is not putting pressure on for that food to be eaten. And this, again, some parents are like, well, I haven't put pressure on and it's still not working. But it's about that kind of the environment. So stepping away from the fact of I need to get you to eat this, and stepping back into, let's just make this a really enjoyable mealtime where no one's battling, where no one's being pressured to eat something. And that can be different for every family, but just taking any pressures off to eat certain foods, because the more we pressure kids to eat certain foods, there's actually research that shows the less willing they will be to eat it. So the more that you're like, go on, just take some of those, or go on, just give it a try. You've liked this before, so I know you like it. I just need you to try it. It's not going to help. It's going to have the opposite effect. So that kind of nonchalance, that kind of, okay, don't eat it, that's fine. And the kind of role modeling that you're eating it yourself without going, yummy, I'm loving this. You know,
broccoli.
This is a really nice, I've really just enjoyed that meal. Yes, you know, I really enjoyed it, really like that. That is going to have much more of an impact than us trying to kind of beg them or coax them to try or taste or lick. Because in their minds, they're going, they want me to do this. And there's a reason probably why I shouldn't, you know, there's a reason why they're really pushing me to do this. And they often end up going the opposite way. Remembering that it takes time, remembering that kids are going to go through phases where they don't like certain foods. And exactly like you say, one of the things I often say is keep offering that variety. The more that we go, okay, they don't like that, tick, we won't offer that again. Oh, they don't like that, okay, cross that off, we're not going to offer that again. We end up really limiting their diet, and kids like what is familiar. and what they are familiar with. So if they're familiar with a spread in front of them, even if they're not eating it, that's in their mind building normality of those foods. Those foods become normal and the thing to eat. It takes time and you're not alone. And so many parents go through. I mean, there's so many foods that my daughter won't eat. She went through food. She's not doing any more of just saying yucky, yucky to so many foods. And we have to just breathe through that and ignore it. And my son is kind of, you know, really out the other side at six, and there's very little that he won't eat. And I think my daughter is definitely a very different child and always, I think, going to be a little bit more picky. But the more variety you offer, the more options there are that they will accept, and the more that we hone that variety in, the more that you'll end up having them eating just a restricted amount of food. So hopefully those kind of tips help. And there is information in this book about it, and I've obviously got a book which is called How to Feed Your Toddler, which goes into the psychology of this so much more as well. So it might be helpful for any parents who are struggling.
Definitely It's also really I think hard for us to handle this, navigate this kind of thing, because we were brought up by our parents in terms of food and feeding and eating and mealtime so differently. And so we're almost like having to like unlearn all of this stuff. Like, you know, I was told to sit there and like, you know, sit there until you've emptied your plate, cleaned your plate. And I remember like sitting there in tears. I can vividly remember like having to finish eating this curry that I hated when I was little and sitting there and crying. Like I've got to force myself to eat it. I'm not allowed to get, you know, down from the table. And that sort of stuff stays with us. And it's really hard then. Like you find yourself just sort of saying things and you're like, but why am I saying that? And you realize it's because it's just ingrained in us from when we were kids.
Yeah, completely. That just gave me goosebumps because it's just so true. Like, I, you know, the idea of a child sitting at a table crying and being forced to eat food. And it was really normal when we grew up. You know, we grew up just after kind of times where rationing and, you know, it just wasn't a thing to waste food. And you know, you can understand where it all came from. And also that was just the norm. So parents weren't trying to harm us. No, they didn't really get it. But I did as well. You know, I grew up where my mum would scrape the plate and be like, just eat this half. You don't have to eat anymore. Just eat this half. And, you know, although I don't have any kind of psychological effect, I remember it. I remember clearly being at table, not wanting to eat something. And the psychological impact of that can be huge. So a lot of what nutritionists like myself talk about in this day and age is trying to build a healthy relationship with food, and forcing children to sit down and eat something they don't want is not going to help. Like, if you imagine if somebody sat you at a table, let's say that you were just not hungry, maybe you'd snacked extra during the day, maybe you weren't feeling great, maybe you had a bit of a headache, maybe your throat hurt, and if somebody sat you down and said to you, you will finish that, I've made that for you. You will finish it. I want you to eat every mouthful. And maybe it was something you're also not that keen on. Let's say like fish that a lot of people aren't necessarily that keen on. Imagine that you were forced to sit down and eat a plate of fish when you weren't hungry, when you weren't feeling your best. How is that? What effect is that going to have on you coming back to that table, back to that scenario, and being given that meal again?
You just wouldn't do it, would you?
You just wouldn't want it. And the psychological impact, you're going to think, I don't want to go back to that mealtime. I don't want to be offered that plate. I don't want to be given that food again. And if this happens multiple times with multiple foods, the knock-on impact can be huge. Mm-hmm. So for me, the pressure to eat up, it's so easy to do as a parent because you're like, please, I know this is good for you. I know you should eat it. It doesn't help in the long run. Yeah. And as you said, you remember it from, you know, from a few years back, you remember it. So it's so important.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey.
If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. And the autonomy thing that you've talked about, I think is really important. And there's a theory, isn't there, called the division of responsibility that we try to kind of use, which is that we decide when mealtimes are and what is served, but our kids decide how much to eat. But the thing that I struggle with around that is that quite often my kids will reject dinner and then 10 minutes later, they're like, I'm hungry. And we have to decide, do we give you a bowl of cereal because you're hungry? Or do we double down and say, no, you can finish your dinner or nothing else? And then we just have like tears and tantrums and it's stressful.
It's really hard.
It's really hard. It's really hard. And we kind of like sway between the two, not really knowing like what the best thing to do is.
Yeah. So I love that. And it's amazing that, you know, you utilize the division of responsibility because it is important. And it's important for allowing children to eat to their own appetite. So rather than us dictating how much they should eat in this instant, you know, again, as adults, we dictate how much we eat. So we don't necessarily finish a whole meal if we don't feel like it. We might leave a little bit on the plate, or we might only serve ourselves a smaller portion because we know what our appetite is saying. But kids, you know, us thinking, I've given you this much, this is how much I think you need to eat right now. If you think about it, why are we in charge of their own appetite and how they feel? It is crazy. But that's a really good question. And it's another reason why menu planning and having a meal plan can help. Because one of the things that I do, and my kids will often say, you know, maybe they didn't like what's on offer. Maybe they just didn't feel like that today. But actually, we aren't chefs in the kitchen that can just go, oh, yeah, let's just whip up something else for you because you don't fancy that today. It's not a good message to teach children that they can refuse something and they'll just get something brand new. Yeah. And because what ends up happening is they end up often having favorite options. So if you think about a child going, right, I didn't really fancy that meal, or I just, you know, I wanted something else and I got my firm favorite, what they're going to do at that next meal? Yeah, let's get the firm favorite again. And it can become more habitual for them to say, no, don't want that, something else. And actually all you can do in that situation is often encourage more food refusal and more picky eating. So what I normally would say is, what, you know, you've got, here's the dinner. This is what's on offer today. Look at the menu plan. This is what's on offer today. I totally get that you're saying that you want cereal, or that you're saying that you want beans on toast. But if you look, actually, that's what's on offer tomorrow. Or maybe we can switch this meal plan around and we can have that tomorrow. So I totally get, you know, that you want the beans on toast today. It's not on offer today. And I've done that with both my kids from day one. So now they know, oh, that's not on offer today. I'm really sorry. The only time I would change this is if you're finding your little one is going through a real period of food refusal when they're refusing dinner on the regular, and you are finding it's impacting sleep or it's impacting behavior, then you could try introducing a small snack before bedtime, which becomes the norm. It's added into the menu plan, or it's added into your routine, so that it's not an alternative. It's this is the dinner. Okay, you know, if you're not eating it, that's fine. You don't have to eat it, but there's a kind of nutritious, maybe it's like yogurt and some slices of apple, or maybe it's like some peanut butter on toast that is had not as an alternative to that meal, but maybe let's say an hour later, just before bed, that you have as a kind of coverall to try and reduce that hunger, making sure it's nice and nutrient rich and it's not like a bag of crisps or something, which isn't really going to help, you know, get rid of that hunger or get them any nutrients in. So that's what I would say. I would also say it's often, you know, a bit of a phase. And also let's remember that children are creatures of routine and habit, and what becomes normal will often be what they kind of, you know, stick to. And the last thing to say on that point is, if you do plenty of those kind of component meals or those spreads where children do help themselves, so I will often, let's say that I was offering my kids a curry that they haven't really had very often, maybe it's a new recipe I'm trying out and I'm a bit unsure about whether they'll eat it, what I'll often do is I'll do the curry and I'll have that, and I'll serve it with rice because I know they'll eat rice, with yogurt because I know they'll eat yogurt, with some peas because I know they'll eat peas. Those are all quite easy things that you would normally offer with a curry anyway. So it's not like it's a curry and then I've offered a slice of toast with it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's things that would come with a curry that go naturally. But I know if my kids don't touch that curry, they're going to eat rice, yogurt and peas. Boom. balance. There's nutrients in there. It's nice and filling. So actually, I still feel confident that even if they don't touch that nice curry that I have made them, that obviously I can either reuse or I can have myself, they will be getting something to eat.
So eating together is often a bit of a crunch point for parents as well. And it's something that we've struggled with. So we still give our four-year-olds dinner at 5 p.m. and then we eat with our eldest child when they've gone to bed. And we used to all eat together at about 5 o'clock. We found it really hard. And my eldest often has clubs and it became this stressful kind of pressure cooker thing. And it was no fun for anyone. But it is really important, isn't it, to eat as a family? So tell me why we should kind of revert back to all eating together.
Well, I think the first thing I would say is even in that scenario, so many families are going to have that scenario. We're not all going to be in the house at the same time always. And so it's totally understandable. And I would normally say just whenever you can, try and have a family meal because it's quite social for the kids. And actually, I think you'll find that families who say they do it do say that the kids do enjoy it. Mm-hmm. They enjoy being part of that meal. And like we've talked about, food isn't just about getting them to eat. It's about helping them to enjoy the process of foods and that kind of eating together and that conviviality, which is like this, the idea of socializing around food and eating together. It is key. And it does come up in research, especially around like Mediterranean eating, that kind of behavior of stopping, pausing, turning everything off, families and communities coming together and sharing their food. It's a really lovely concept. And there's a reason why it works, because of all of that, it's the joy of eating rather than like the process of eating, if you like. So if you can eat together, even if it's like once a week on a Sunday afternoon, it will help and it'll be important. But the midweek chaos and carnage of not eating together, don't put the pressure on. You know, as a family, we don't eat together. I normally eat with my two at 5. And the reason I do that is I'll normally eat either part of their meal or I'll share a bit of their meal together. And then when my husband comes in, I'll eat with him later, like my proper meal. So I will normally, let's say that the kids are having a curry, I might just have a really small portion of it. Or if we're having one of those shared meals, I'll just have a little bit of, you know, maybe a couple of sprigs of asparagus and a little bit of rice or something, so that I'm sitting with them, communicating with them and having some of the foods that they are eating, because eating together can really have an impact on them. I think so often as parents, we've got our minds like, we've got to do this. So we feed the kids and we go off and do the dishwasher and clean the sides and put all the stuff away, you know, which is understandable. But I think pausing and taking that time at mealtime can have a really big impact on whether they enjoy the mealtime and whether they see you eating and whether they learn about kind of eating and talking and enjoying food with you. So even if it's just the two of them and you or you know, whoever's looking after your kids during the day, it matters. So try and sit with them and pause and take some time to eat a meal with them, even if it's not your proper meal, even if you're eating your proper meal later. And like I said, don't expect all of the family members to be eating. Just one-on-one is also fine. Just ideally not having them eating on their own. Because again, if your kids go to nursery or school, quite often nurseries and schools say that their kids eat really well in those settings, and then they come home and they don't eat so well. And quite often that's because they're just sat down with a load of friends and they're all kind of eating similar things and they're just having conversation and having Pokemon wars over lunch or whatever, and they're enjoying that mealtime. So that's quite often why that happens. So like I say, take the pressure off. Doesn't have to be every meal all together as a family, but somebody eating with your kids when they're eating their meals and eating ideally similar things is what we're looking for. So what you're doing is absolutely fine. You know, sitting down, having something at 5 and then eating, you know, later on, if you can, you know, I hope that makes sense.
It does. Okay, so let's talk about snacks. Let's get real. Most toddler and kids snacks aren't great for them, are they? We give ours, and I'm about to list a whole bunch that aren't great for them. We give ours those fruit puree pouches and yogurt covered strawberry pieces and toddler cereal bars, but I'm pretty sure they're all going to be really sugary and not ideal. And because they've got an older sibling, they've moved on to eating packets of crisps way earlier than their sister did. What kinds of quick, easy snacks are good for kids?
So, yeah, such a good question. Snacks is such a tricky topic because kids do need often filling up in between those meal times. They need to be filled up. But the problem with the snack situation is that actually the snacks that we often have readily available and the snacks that are the norm to give to kids often aren't nutrient dense ones. And, you know, I don't want to be someone who's like shaming parents for what they give to their kids. I really don't. It's not my aim. Parenting is hard. It's so hard. And we all have our own shortcuts. And I think it's so important that we, as a family, go, I'm okay with taking this shortcut in these instances, because actually everything else I'm trying to do really hard. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can't be perfect. So give yourself a break and have your own shortcut. So if that snacks on occasions, fine. The reason why snacks are talked about quite a lot is because young children, especially young children who are growing, they have quite small tummies and they often don't have huge appetites because they're so easily distracted by other things, or maybe their appetite's down for a few weeks when they're growing or when they've got illness. You know, there's so many things that impact their appetite. So they've got tiny tummies, their appetites are very, very fickle, but they also have very high energy needs and they also have very high nutrient needs. So they need really high amounts of iron when they're growing, because iron is important for growing and for building the immune system and all of those things. So just as an example, they need high iron intakes. And a lot of those kind of snacks, like the crisps or biscuits or kind of on the go, you know, fruity, just chewy, fruity pieces, they're not really very high in nutrients. They're often very high. They're very sweet, or they're very kind of sticky and not great for dental health either. Or they're like a packet of crisps, for example. They're not really full of anything that's going to help your kid. They might have some salt, they might have a bit of fat in them, but they're not likely to be a source of those nutrients that actually kids do need. Now, like I said, if you feel confident that your kid's having good meals and then you're adding those snacks on because you need to at certain points, try not to berate yourself about it. But the one thing I do, and I actually talk about this in my toddler book, is try and make the most of snacks. So rather than it being a packet of crisps, boom, that's their snack. How can we add extra? So maybe it's like a packet of crisps with a bit, you know, one of those, a small kind of on-the-go cheese, or a carton of milk, or, you know, how can we bulk that out? So rather than it being just this as a snack, we're actually adding nutrients into that snack. We're giving them more. They're having more energy, more nutrients, getting a little bit more filled up, and having that energy to run around a bit more with this snack. It might be a piece of fruit. It might be a little box of berries that we've just shoved in before we've left the house. How can we add a bit extra to those snacks? So that's one thing I would do. The second thing is, like I say, trying if you can to have kind of maybe more nutrient-rich snacks, which is not easy on the go, I know. I've got a lot of recipes in my book, again, which what I try and do is I make them in bulk and I will freeze them. And I, like I said to you at the very beginning, I'll get out a couple, I'll pop them in a little bag and I'll take them with me, maybe with a piece of fresh fruit or something that's easy to carry. And with older kids, I find things like nuts and raisins are so good because they're incredibly nutrient rich. Quite often kids really like them, and they're more likely to kind of be able to eat those and get a good dose of energy. And then they can have that with something like, you know, half a packet of crisps or whatever it is that they're having. So those are some of the things that I would say to do. I think snacking is really hard, but if you can get ahead, make things in bulk. When you're giving those kind of snacks bought from the shop, just top them up with something else if you can. Those are some of the things that I would try and say. But I'm very aware that what's on offer in the supermarkets isn't always going to be the best option. It's really tough. And I would try and say, just try and, like I say, do kind of multi-component snacks. So you've got a bit of a balance going on. So it might be a piece of fruit. It might be a little block of cheese. And then it might be one of those OT bars, for example. But just top them up where you can. And I know it's a real tough topic to talk about, because I know it's controversial and parents get really feel quite judged about snacks, I think. And it's really tough because what's available in the supermarket is not always the best option, but there's ways and you don't need to feel guilty about it.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that you know, we you walk down the aisle, the baby, toddler, kids aisle of the supermarket, And that's the stuff that's there. And so you could be absolutely forgiven for like loading up your shopping trolley and feeling like, well, I've got toddler and kid snacks. It's all good. So that is super, super helpful. The whole kind of just adding to it and not feeling guilty about it. You mentioned nutrition there. How do our kids' nutritional needs differ from ours? Because I remember being told that we shouldn't give our toddlers too much fiber, yet we're so used to hearing that a high fiber diet is good for us as adults.
So yeah, that's a really good question. And again, I do talk about this a lot in my book, Toddler, and actually in the How to Feed Your Family book, I've got a whole section at the front on the kind of differences between feeding adults, feeding teenagers and young kids, feeding toddlers and feeding babies. And there's actually a tick list in the back of each of these so that if you are kind of struggling, as little reminders of, you know, almost the kind of general what's needed, because I know it's challenging. And I think like having a little tick list for me is really great. And I used to do it for myself as well during pregnancy. I used to have a tick list. So at the end of the day, I was like, you know, have I had what I've needed? You know, I know that it's not always going to be practical for everyone, but it's really helpful. But there are some differences. So a few things, like I've already said, toddlers and young children have small tummies. They need high amounts of energy and nutrients per bite of food that they eat. So they need to try and get as much in as they can, which is why it isn't ideal to just be filling them up, let's say on a packet of crisps, which actually isn't going to offer them the energy and nutrients that they need necessarily. So first is that they need the high energy diet. Second is that, you know, they're not really recommended to have low fat foods. And the reason for this is actually fat's very important for growing brains. Fat's very important for young children who are growing. So the kind of low fat and diet, which I wouldn't generally recommend for most people anyway, but it's not really ideal for young kids because they need plenty of energy and they need plenty of nutrients. And fat is also important in children's diets too. So things like olive oil and full fat milks and using things like avocado, it is great. It's good to offer kids those kind of foods. And the other thing to say is exactly as you mentioned, fiber. So one of the reasons for this is it comes back to that small tummy, is high fiber is recommended for adults because it helps us to feel full. It helps us to go, I've had a good meal, I don't need to keep eating and eat lots more. So it's great for like making us feel satisfied basically after a meal. And also fiber is really good for keeping our digestive system healthy. There's so many benefits to fiber. And, you know, we've seen in research that the more kind of fiber that we eat, the healthier we're likely to be, the healthier our guts are likely to be. However, in children, again, when we come back to this tiny tummy, if they're eating lots of high fiber foods, they're not going to have room for all of that extra energy and nutrients that we've talked about that they need, because it's going to bulk their tummy out a little bit. However, having said that, it is important for kids to get enough fiber. It really is. It's just when they're babies and, you know, kind of between the age of 6 months and 2 years of age, they don't want to be having only like high fiber, like all whole grains and all, you know, obviously they're having lots of fruit and vegetables and things like lentils and beans are great for them, but they might not be able to have huge portions of them because of how high in fiber they are. So it's really more about just going in a little bit smaller, maybe with the whole grains versus kind of white varieties, you're doing a bit of a 50-50 and then gradually getting towards them having mainly the whole grains. Yeah. But ultimately, I think most children actually aren't getting enough fiber. So I don't think it's really something we all need to worry about and think, oh gosh, I need to reduce my child's fiber. In most situations, that won't be the case. It's only if they're feeling really full up after certain foods and then are refusing to eat other things for the rest of the day. And in my experience, it doesn't happen that often. And I think that a lot of kids aren't getting enough fiber. We just had a recent nutrition report come out, which has said that most children and most adults do not eat enough fiber. So in my experience, it's not really something the parents need to go, aha, I need to worry about that. And the one other nutrient to talk about is iron, because as I mentioned, children are growing at a fast rate. They need plenty of iron. Iron's important for so many different functions in the body. And actually, it's very hard to get iron in the diet. It's not something that children are naturally going to kind of take to. So things like red lentils are a really good source of iron. Red meat's a good source of iron. Things like egg yolks are a good source of iron. And beans and pulses, nut butters can be a good source of iron as well. So not always foods that children really navigate towards, but having a variety in the diet, plant-based proteins, often contain lots of iron. Things like tofu can be good sources. And like I said, a bit of meat in the diet as well, and some fish and some egg. So kind of combining all of that together can help to make sure that little ones get enough iron. And I have got a blog on that. So there's lots of information in my books and on my website about iron if you are thinking about it. But yeah, that's kind of the differences, really.
Excellent. And how we talk about food and health really matters, doesn't it? My four-year-olds are already coming back from preschool and asking if the food they're eating is healthy. And I struggle to know what to say, because I know it's not really great to label food as good food or bad food. Yeah. So how would you suggest we kind of model that kind of talking about food in a good way?
Yeah, I think it's really challenging, especially when they're coming home from school, and you don't want to say, oh, you know, that's not how you should talk about food. But I guess it's about showing a different way. Like, you know, as you know, the parents, they will pick up so much from us at home too. And I often say that to parents who are worried about like what their kids are being fed at nursery or school. It's, you know, what happening the majority of time, and what happening at home will be what makes a big difference. So yeah, I am not an advocate for labeling foods as good or bad. And I think that, you know, food, you know, a chocolate is not a bad food. It's just about how much we would have it. And just like we wouldn't necessarily have broccoli every single day, we might not have chocolate every single day. So it's much more about this kind of healthy, you know, we've talked so much about having a really positive relationship with food. So saying that some food's bad, that's not going to be encouraging a healthy relationship. So for me, it's talking to the kids about balance. It's talking about how you feel when you eat certain foods. It's talking about what they like and they don't like. And it's about involving all foods in that kind of play. You know, whenever we sit down with kids, we always go, oh yes, I'd love some cake, which is fine. Like there's nothing wrong with saying that, but we never kind of put foods like, you know, quiche or spaghetti onto that pedestal. We're always going, oh, I'd love some chocolate. And, you know, I play shops and things like that with my daughter all the time because she loves to serve me food. And I know it sounds so silly, but I make sure that I don't always say, oh yes, I'd love some cake, because she's going to just think that that's the thing that is the good stuff. And for me, I love food. I love bread. I love spaghetti. You know, I love a good lasagna, for example. And, you know, so I talk about my love of food in general, and that can be chocolate and that can be lasagna. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So I do try and do it. And like, for example, I really love courgette. I know it's a bit of a funny vegetable to love, but I love it, and I will eat it raw, and I would, you know, sometimes just kind of frying it up with a tiny little bit of oil. Oh God, for me, I love it. So I tell my kids when I really like or enjoy something. Because for them, I think that's really important. So it's trying not to put certain foods on a pedestal. And, you know, I talk about this in celebrations again, when we have celebrations. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't offer party food. Please offer party food. And most kids are going to be normal, you know, to have that. But actually, there are other foods that can be really enjoyable that kids love that we could bring out at those as well. So I think it's about that, and not trying to offer certain foods as treats. So, you know, oh, if you have that, you can have some chocolate buttons, because all we're doing is making that the desire. So when you then offer them a plate of lasagna and they go, oh, I don't want this, it's because, you know, often we've gone, this is the best stuff. This is what you really want. And this is, you've got to just get through this to get to this, you know. Yeah. So trying to keep foods on a level of playing field, not talking about things like foods being good or bad, or, oh, I should not be eating this. This isn't good for me. Like, no, because that is not going to have a positive impact on how your kids feels about food. And I think a lot of us do love food and are foodies, and trying to raise kids to love food too. And so it's all about trying to just help them enjoy. We have such a wide variety of foods available to us. We are so lucky. We are so lucky and so privileged to be able to go to the supermarket and buy a tin of beans, or buy, you know, sourdough bread, or whatever it is that we enjoy as a family. And we're so lucky. And I think it's just about appreciating food for being food, and just loving it, and letting your kids see you love it, whether that's chocolate or cheese or broccoli.
Yeah. Yeah. Charlotte, thank you so much. I feel so inspired. I feel like this conversation has definitely helped me kind of reframe a lot about feeding my family. Thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been such a great chat. Remind us where we can find you online and where we can find your books before you go.
Oh, amazing. So thank you so much. And I really do hope that the How to Feed Your Family, I really hope that it does help take the pressure off families and just, you know, give them a bit of, you know, inspiration and joy with doing all of this. I really genuinely do. That's my aim with it. So thank you for letting me talk about it and witter on to you for helping. But yeah, so you can find me. I'm on Instagram at @sr_nutrition. But I also have a website, which is www.srnutrition.co.uk. And honestly, there is so much on there. I think loads of people don't know that I have a website. I have a blog. I've got recipes. I've pretty much answered every single child feeding or baby feeding question ever on that blog. So do go check that out. And you can find How to Feed Your Family, local bookstore, if you like using those, Waterstones, WH Smith's, and Amazon as well. You can find How to Feed Your Family. So thank you guys for listening, and I hope it was helpful. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.